Welcome to In the Dark, everyone. Nice to be here again. I have a really, really incredible near-death encounter I wanted to share with you guys tonight, and I'm not going to waste any time. So here we go.
My name's Penny Whitbroat, and in 2015, I had a near-death experience when I had an allergic reaction and I quit breathing. So I had gone to the hospital, wasn't sure what I was having a reaction to, and I had an EpiPen because I had an established allergy to shellfish. So I had used that. I got to the hospital. The nurse that was there I knew because I had worked at that hospital, and I was a little worried about the kind of care I would get, not necessarily from the hospital, but that particular nurse. And so when I walked in, she said, you know, what do you need to be seen for? And I'm wheezing and looking up and I can't breathe. And so I barely can speak. And I'm like, I'm having an allergic reaction. And I set the empty EpiPen on the counter so she could see that I had taken that. And she's like, well, if you took that, why did you come here? And I thought, oh, great, you know, I'm going to die. She doesn't even understand the basics of anaphylaxis. And to be fair, we don't see a ton of it in the ER, but we do see it. So she takes me back and she says, you know, we don't have a bed, so I'm going to put you in a wheelchair. They had a clean room, but not a bed. I'm like, I don't need a bed. She's like, no, you have to wait till we get a bed. So she puts me in a wheelchair and rolls me down this hallway that leads to the bathroom and the doctor's sleeping quarters. So nobody's down there. And I'm just sitting in this hall by myself where no one can see me. And it's just getting worse and worse. And I was having to look up to be able to breathe. And I thought, I'm going to die. And so luckily, EpiPens come in two packs. So I went ahead in the ER, gave myself my second dose. And that held me for, I don't know, maybe another 15 minutes. And then I started having stridor, which is this really squeaky breathing sound you have as your airway closes. And a doctor heard it, and she stuck her head down the hall. And she's like, oh, my gosh. So she runs down the hall, gets the wheelchair, wheels me into the room that has a bed. And they get me up there. And now, because I'm in anaphylaxis, my veins have all kind of flattened out. They can't get an IV in me. It's a very, very bad position to be in. She's like, we're going across the hall. And I thought, oh, no, they're going to end up coding me because that's trauma, you know, and I worked there. So I know what the trauma room's for. And I had nurses on either side trying to put IVs in, and they were all just really sketchy. I'm like, this thing's not going to hold up. And they're giving me shots of Benadryl and shots of steroids and more epinephrine and more epinephrine. And by the time my husband got there, he walked in, and I'm sitting straight up in the bed looking up and just, you know, tears because I couldn't breathe. And he gets the doctor. He's like, you got to do something. She's going to quit breathing. And the doctor's like, oh, no, we've got plenty of time. And I remember hearing that. And then everything kind of started feeling very like I was in a tunnel or something, not like a tunnel of light. But if you've ever passed out, that kind of distant feeling where voices sound far away. And I thought that this is it. And so I quit breathing, fell over, and they called the code. And I was out of my body at that point, looking down, and I didn't recognize me. And I thought, oh, man, she's in rough shape. She's the one that's coding. You know, I hope she does okay. And I saw everybody run in, and kind of as they were running in, my husband was being pushed out of the room. And that's it. You know, I didn't wake up. So they induced a coma and put me on the ventilator, put me on a life flight to Lexington, drilled an IV into my shin, which I didn't know could be done. Funny, it's a nurse, you'd think I'd know that. But yeah, they've got like a little Dremel, and they just screw that thing right into your shin bone, and they can give you drugs that way. So that was good. So they take me off to Lexington, and I spend, I want to say, 5 days in an induced coma before I can come off the ventilator. But in that time, the first thing that happened was I kind of came back to, and I was in my sister's car, and she lived in Wisconsin at the time, and she was driving to get to Kentucky, and it was pouring rain late at night, and I'm like, what is she doing out this late? The weather's terrible. You know, I wonder if something's happened to the kids. And so she pulls over at this gas station underneath this canopy, and she puts her hand in her purse and pulls out her phone. And so I lean over, and her clothes are wrinkled and mismatched. And I'm like, did she get dressed in the dark? What is going on here? You know? So she pulls out her phone and she types in, hang on, kiddo, I'm coming, which was kind of interesting because I saw that after I came out of the coma and, you know, had a confirmation of it. Then, you know, I saw that, and then I was back in this dark place. So I'm in this place and it's dark. Like, a lot of people haven't really experienced complete darkness, but it was completely dark. And I couldn't determine how big it was, how small it was, because it was so dark. But I had an image of me there somehow. I couldn't figure out like what was holding me. And I try to move and I can't move. And it feels like something's holding me down. And it feels like I'm really having to struggle to breathe. And I'm super claustrophobic. So that totally freaked me out. And I had like this panic attack. And then this, I called it the deep sleep. The deep sleep would just come and like take over. And then I would be asleep and I'd wake up. And this goes on and on for, I always tell people, if I had to give it a time, what it felt like compared to time here, because time there is so different, it was about 10 years. And I keep going in and out and I'm, what am I doing here? What is this place? Have I died? Did I ever exist? And it went on for so long that I started to question if I'd ever really existed. I thought maybe I've been here so long, maybe something terrible happened and I was cast away to this place and I've just made up that whole life just to have something to think about and cling to. And, you know, why is no one looking for me? And I couldn't figure out what was going on. And something tells me, or I get this inclination to lean forward. And so when I say lean forward, I don't mean like at the waist, I mean lean forward like this. And when I did it, all of me went like that, like a plank. The direction that I was pointed in, I could move that direction. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I can move. This is incredible. And so I saw like a light way off on the left and I thought, okay, I'll go that way. So I turn my body and I'm now flying crazy fast that direction and you can't see anything, super dark. And I'm thinking, man, I hope I'm in an open space or I'm gonna, you know, run right into something. So I get to that light section. It's kind of like a barrier and there's something on the other side. And so I just kind of kept staring. And eventually it got clear and I could see me laying in a hospital bed on the other side. And my daughter was there and she was standing to my right, but kind of behind me in front of the ventilator. I remember looking at her shirt and for some reason I knew it was summer. I had that in my head. And I thought, why is she wearing a flannel shirt in the summer? You know, she's so funny that way. And I looked at the, from where I was, which I would say was, felt like, you know, maybe 30 feet away, I could see the fabric on that shirt and I knew what it would feel like. And I'm like, whoa, that's weird. And I knew what she was thinking, which was weird because I never know what she's thinking. She's a very private person. I started kind of taking, you know, surveying the room. I could see that I was in soft restraints so that I couldn't move my hands. I looked to see what drugs I was on and I looked at my vital signs and I'm like, okay, I'm critical but stable. I'm in a coma because I know what those drugs are used for. And apparently I'm just in a coma or something. And I'll wake up and I'll be all back together again. And I thought, well, this is great. You know, hopefully I survive and I can get back in or I die and things get straightened out over here so I'm not stuck in this dark place. And I kind of refocused and was looking at my daughter and I could feel her feelings and hear her thoughts. And she was scared. And she's like the most stoic person I've ever met. And it just broke my heart that she was scared because it's not anything she would ever even tell me, you know? And so I put my hands out to grab her and pull her to me and hug her. And my hands hit the wall and I just lost it. I don't know what's going on here. I was sure that, you know, it had something to do with God. And I was like, what are you doing? You know, why would you torment me like this? You know, what have I done that's earned me this? And I just was so frustrated and enraged and I got sucked back into the darkness. And so I wake up again and I'm like, okay, you know how to move now, let's go. So I go back toward the left, I get to the light and the barrier, instead of being hard, this time is more like a bubble. And so I put my hand to touch it and my hand went through and I'm like, oh, that's so cool. And so I put my other hand through and I'm like, okay, can I just pop in over there? And I did, I just went right through and I was over me and I was looking down at the bed and I made it over. Like, what do I do now? Do I like lay down on top of me and will I get sucked back in and then I'll wake up and everything will be okay? Or I wasn't sure there's, you don't get instructions or anything. It's crazy. And so I was staring at the me in the bed and I was trying to get her to open her eyes. And I'm like, come on, you know, open your eyes. And I'm just trying to will it and it's not happening. And so I'm getting mad. And I thought, okay, now calm down. You don't want to get mad and get sucked back. And it's too big. Let's just get her to move her finger. You know, that would be something. I'm looking at my finger in the bed and I'm like, come on, move your finger, move your, damn it. She won't move her finger, you know? And it's the most frustrating thing I've ever done. And so I got sucked back, but just onto the other side of the wall. I didn't get sucked all the way back. And I started thinking, I'm like, okay, this can't be accidental. I must be here for a reason. There's got to be something I'm supposed to figure out or learn. How did I get in this place? And just kind of like from my spirit, it comes out, you made this place. I wasn't even shocked by it. I heard it and I'm like, that's true, I did. So when I was on this side, after my divorce, I had just kind of closed myself off because I'd been so hurt by that and more so hurt about the abandonment of the kids. You know, that just broke my heart. And I thought, you know, I'm never going to get into another relationship. And people, like, I enjoyed working and had friends at work. I didn't socialize with anybody outside of work. I have social anxiety anyway. And so like I would get really stressed at answering the phone and it was just getting worse and worse. And so I had just completely kind of built this wall around myself to protect me from ever being hurt again. And, you know, the things that you build up here are stored up in heaven, and you have to deal with them, whether they're good or bad, you know? And so that's what this was. This was this physical manifestation of this isolation, the jail that I had built, imprisoned myself in, thinking I was somehow safe. Maybe I was safe, but I wasn't living. And so when I realized that there was this crack, and then where the crack happened, light started coming through, and I was over the moon. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get out. I'm going to get out of this. This is great. And so this whole thing is cracking open almost like an egg. And this big, big, bright spirit starts coming toward me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there's other people or things or whatever here. I'm not alone, you know? And so this spirit, who's female, comes to me, and she's just huge. She's huge. She's grand, you know, not just big in size. She puts her arms out, and I'm immediately drawn into her arms without her touching me. And she's holding me to her chest, and the darkness is breaking apart in shards. And she's got this like whirlwind of energy that's going around us. And as the shards would come and hit her energy, they would be flung off, and then they would be gone. They couldn't fly around anymore. They disappeared. And so she was like, just with her energy, casting away the darkness, and it just was getting brighter and brighter. And I'm crying, like ugly crying. I mean, I was just overwhelmed that there was somebody there, and I didn't initially know who she was. And so I'm freaking out. And she says, calm yourself, dear one, just in her mind. And I hear it in my mind. I always tell people, if you've ever had surgery, when they start giving you that drug to put you to sleep, you can't fight it, but you feel it course through you. And that's what it was like. It was like her words broke down and coursed through my body and caused exactly what she wanted to have happen to happen. And so then I was calm, and I thought, okay, who is she? She's so familiar. And so I look up, and she's got these brilliant green eyes, and I look up further, and then on the top of her head, it looks like flames, and it's this orange red hair. And I knew who she was. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's my grandma. It was amazing to see her on that side, because she died when I was 9 or 10. And so I looked at her, and I'm like, you're alive. And she's like, well, of course I'm alive. And she's like, there's no death. You know this, you learned this. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. And she's like, yes, you learned this when you were really little. Remember, she says, energy can't be created or destroyed. It just changes forms. That's God's law borrowed by man. And I was like, of course, that makes perfect sense. I'd always been a believer, and I had believed in God and was hoping there was heaven. You know, we're all hoping for that, but I didn't feel like I had any real assurance of it. And there she was giving me this assurance based on science, you know, that you do go on. We can't extinguish your light. It has to become something else. And she was just so comforting to me, and she was holding me, and just very, very sweet. And I kind of got lost in that. And when I came back to myself, I realized I was alone, and I was just floating in the light, you know, just was enjoying it. It was really nice. And then all of a sudden, everything shook. It was more like an earthquake from the beginning of time to the end of time. Like things that didn't even exist yet were shaking. It was crazy. I could feel it all the way to my middle. And I knew it was God. And so I immediately tried to start thinking of good things that I had done, because I'm like, he can read my mind. You know, pull something good up to the front, because I don't know, you know, I mean, there's been some bad, and I don't want him to lead with that. And I couldn't think of anything. I've been a nurse. I mean, I could have thought of a million things, but I was stumped. And all of a sudden, there's this light, and it's much brighter than the light that I'm in. And it gets closer and closer. And he says, I am. And I had heard that a million times, you know, the great I am, all these different things. And I never really understood it. But, you know, he was making this declaration that the creator of everything was here. And I really understood it in that moment when he said that, you know, I am. I'm the one who made you. I'm the creator of everything. You know, everything exists as I will it so. And it was just crazy. And so I'm still trying to think of good things. I got nothing. And so I get this sense that we're going to look at my life. And he starts with good, which I appreciated. And he shows this situation where I'm at a store, and the lady in front of me doesn't have enough to pay for her groceries, just cents. And she's trying to figure out what to put back. And I remember how that got me in my gut, because I had been that single mom for years. And, you know, you always put back the thing that you need, not the thing that your kid would enjoy. And so she's like, well, you know, and you can see her putting back like moisturizer, and you know, she's not going to put the kids' mac and cheese back. And I'm like, oh, so in there. And so I fish in my purse, and I get what she's short, and I hand it to her, and she doesn't want to take it. And she's just super embarrassed. And I'm like, it's okay. I've been there. Take it. You know, don't put anything back. And it just broke my heart for her. And he showed me that situation played out years ahead. And she's working as a volunteer in this food pantry, and this woman comes in and doesn't have enough food, and she's humiliated and embarrassed, and she's like, it's okay, I've been there, you know. She packs up this lady's groceries, and I thought, wow, I never thought it that far forward. I thought it was a nice thing to do that day, but I didn't think it would impact her or anyone else. I mean, I'd done some really much bigger things, and I was thinking, I was kind of a little put out by that. I'm like, wow, I did this huge nothing. You want to talk about that incredible thing I did, you know, not just this, but it was that thing that explained to me that what your purpose is in the moment that you're in. It's not some huge big grand thing everybody's trying to figure out. Where are you right now? Who can you help? And that was the importance, that I didn't ignore that. And so then he shows me the bad, and it was this woman that I worked with who was terrible. If you were a patient, you didn't want that nurse. If you were working a hall, you didn't want to work it with her. And she just was kind of, just didn't feel like she was very attentive to her patients. I was always answering her call lights and her IV alarms, and I never said anything negative to her, never talked about her, because I hate gossip. But in my heart, I was holding this, you know, over her. And God flashed back and showed me her whole life, and showed me the things that her dad had done to her for years. And I mean, it was amazing that she wasn't a psychopath. And here, having been used in her whole life, what does she decide to dedicate her career to? Helping other people. And I'm like, is she doing a great job? No, but I mean, considering where she came from, she's doing great. And God's like, you have to control your thoughts. You're having all these negative thoughts about her, and that has energy, and you're putting it on her, and you're making it harder for her to be who I intended her to be. You're chaining her. And I felt so bad. I thought I was doing so well by not speaking those things and not gossiping and not being hateful to people. But if you're walking around harboring it, you're injuring them just the same. And he's like, you know, you have to look for the good in her and capitalize on that. And then I felt so bad that I hadn't done that, because I had such an opportunity to do it, you know, to point out any good that she did. I could have done that. And it changed me. It was good. There's a million things that happened that I never get to talk about because it would take weeks. But at that point, I'm trying to decide, you know, whether I trust God and I want to let God in. And because I knew he knew me and knew everything about me. And I just didn't know whether I wanted to let that kind of power have any sway over me. And so I was standing there, and I had to make this choice, you know, was I going to kind of surrender myself to God? And I thought, okay, I will. And his energy, kind of this light, came through my toes, up my legs, into my middle. And it was like a cloak. It was swirling around inside me, like healing hurts and all these things that I didn't even remember were problems. And went up, and it went around my heart and up through my throat and my mouth. And I was able to sing just these beautiful songs. And I'm like, where is that coming from? I'm a terrible singer. And then it kind of came up, and it was going to come out of my eyes. And it was so warm and so accepting and loving that I didn't want to let it out. So I squeezed my eyes shut, and it shot through my eyelashes and my eyelids and hit the light that was God on the outside of me, and then came rushing back in, went up through all the different curves in my brain, and was lighting up my brain. And everything I had never understood, I understood. And everything I didn't know that I didn't know, I knew. And, you know, he blocked that. I didn't get to have that coming back. But it was amazing in that moment. Like, everything finally made sense. So we kind of go through that moment, and we're going to go through this journey. I wasn't understanding, like, if we were going to go over and I was going to stay permanently or what was going to happen. But I knew I had to make a decision on this part, too. And I got all kind of irritated inside. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. You know, you're overwhelming me with all this love and goodness and stuff. But where were you when my boys were struggling and my daughter? Where were you when their dad left? You know, where were you when they walked to the mailbox every day to get something he promised to them that never came? Where were you? You know, it was one thing for me to struggle through that divorce, but they were kids, you know, these are innocent children. Where were you? And it was pointed, and I was angry. And he didn't even like flinch at that, you know, he understood. And he's like, oh, dear one, you've completely misunderstood me. Let me show you. And so he flashes forward, and I can see, I'm sitting in the seat in the bleachers next to my son, and my oldest grandchild is playing soccer. So at the time when I quit breathing and had all this medical issue, he was 2, but in this vision, he's 5. And so he's running up and down the field. And I remember looking at him and seeing the sun on his skin and on his hair and just being like, wow, he's just so alive, you know? And he's running, and my son looks over to me and he says, Mom, I'm going to be the dad to him that I deserved. And I'm like, oh, you're breaking that chain. You're breaking that cycle of broken homes and absent fathers. And you're doing that through, you know, my kids. And it still gets me every time. And I thought, okay, you know, if we had to be the generation to take that hurt, to be able to turn it around, okay, then it's okay. And it made sense to me. And, you know, I've since shared that with my son. But so when my grandson was 5, I was actually at a soccer game and my son actually looked at me and said that. And I was like, okay. You know, because you get really far out if you have a fantastical experience. The further out you get from it, the more you kind of question it. You're like, well, you know, but that confirmed, that was God's confirmation for me in that moment. And he's like, keep going forward, you know, you're on the right track. And it just was so important. When I saw that, I just completely was okay to let myself be 100% vulnerable to God. And so I just opened up and he grabbed my hand and we started going through the spirals of my DNA. And I was, you know, looking at everything. And as we would go through a strand, I could feel it like stroke over my skin. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's just amazing. And we're going and it's super fast. We're going really, really fast. And we get down to this one spot. And he just stops, like, you know, hitting a wall. And he says, do you see me? And I'm like, well, yeah, you're everywhere. Of course I see you. And he's like, no. And he points to this spot in my DNA. And he's like, right there. Do you see me? And I looked and I did. And it was in that part of our DNA that they call junk DNA, that we don't know what that DNA does. And it was funny because it hadn't actually been that long ago that I had read about junk DNA. And he was right there. And I was like, oh my gosh, you're in me? He's like, yes, I'm your father, just like your father is your father. You can say he's not, but we could do testing and figure out that he is. He's your biological father, whether you want to admit it or not, and I'm your father, whether people want to admit it or not. And it just blew me away. And so I knew at that point that if we went past that, then I was staying. And I'm like, all right, I'm in, let's stay, you know? And I felt like so loved and accepted, like I didn't have to do another thing. A lot of us have this idea that you've got to constantly be doing for God to be loved. You know, you have to be doing something that measures up. And it wasn't like that. He loved me because he made me, you know, and he adored me and he thought me up. And I remember thinking, you know, how long did he think of me? Because I thought of my children before I had them. And when I first got pregnant, what would they be like? And what would their lives be like? And I thought, it can't be much different for God. You know, he's knitting you together. And he's got to be, you know, kind of seeing you live out your life. And I thought, how long did he think of me before he decided to make me? And he made me on purpose. He could have made somebody else. But I'm on purpose for a purpose. And I'd never really gotten that. And I looked back at my life and I thought, you've wasted it. You know, yes, you're a nurse and you're raising good kids and all this stuff, but you've not fulfilled your purpose. And if you check out now, I mean, it's like cheating. You just quit. You're just a quitter. And I didn't want to be a quitter, you know, and I felt like I had not embraced everything that I am by being a creation of God, by building that wall around me. And I thought, okay, well, could I go back? And I didn't know. And I thought, could I go back and tear down the wall? And I thought, I could do that. That would be a start. And so I made that decision to go back, and he immediately started pulling away. I could feel that distance, and I started to cry. And so I wake up, I'm in the hospital room. There's a nurse sitting beside the bed, and she's like, oh, you're back. And I look at her and I said, I was with God. And she's like, oh, that's nice, dear. I'm like, no, I mean, like, just a minute ago, I was with God. And she's like, oh, that's good. Let me go get your family. So she goes and gets the family. And I'm like, I was with God. I mean, just a minute ago, I was with God. And they're like, that's good. And they're looking at the nurse. And she's like, well, maybe everybody should leave. You know, she's just been off the vent for a little while. We don't want to wear her out. And so she sends everybody away. And she leaves the room and turns the lights off and pulls this curtain in front of this glass, like, wall that's in that room so they can see you. And God reappears, like, in the room. And it scared me, and I screamed because I didn't expect him just to pop in. And he laughed. I'm like, oh, you scared me. And so he laughs. He's like, why did I scare you? And I'm like, well, I thought you were gone. He says, I'm never gone. I'm like, well, I know you're never gone, but you don't just pop into rooms like that. That's startling, you know? And he thought it was funny. And so he had given me this message, and he's like, I want you to share this message with the world. And, you know, that he is God and he is the creator and that we are made on purpose for a purpose. And one of my friends who always called and checked on me called me, and he was always asking me to do this speaking engagement for the International Association of Near-Death Studies has a support group up in Cincy. And I always said no, or thought of a reason not to do it, because I have terrible social anxiety. And he called, and I said yes before I could stop myself. And he was shocked. He was like, what? I'm like, just hang up now. I'm going to make something up. Just go. And I've said yes ever since. I've not had another episode of respiratory failure. Things slowly started to settle down. You know, we got some answers as to what was going on with me, but it's been quite a journey.
Hey guys, hope you enjoyed that episode. I thought it was just an amazing near-death encounter story. I really loved it, especially the part, you know, where God's DNA is inside of us. It's incredible. And our thoughts, how powerful they are, that, you know, even if we think bad things about each other or towards somebody, it can actually harm them. So it's something to really think about. And I know for one, I'm going to be working on that a lot. You know, from now on, I'm going to really try to train myself to, you know, think better things towards situations and people and everything in my day and in my life. So don't mean to cut this short. I have a lot to do tonight. I just wanted to jump on here and send this over to you. And within the next couple days, I'm going to be re-uploading my Christmas story. So look for that too. You guys have a great evening or day wherever you are. God bless you. Take care. Bye-bye.